session number 12716, Mr. J. Coughlin, reel 17.
Mr. J. Coughlin, reel 17. When the battle's over, Mr. Coughlin, and you've seen your dead and the wounded, do men discuss what's happened?
Yes, they do. Well, as I've said, they discuss the funny stories, and they discuss the hardline stories, and they discuss the more serious stories. Well, it's like anything else. Everybody, to put the mind at rest, to get shut of the nerves, they like to tell somebody, just to, you know, so they can, it's tension, you say, well, where's so-and-so, what happened to him, well, I'll talk and explain, you know, and you're going around inquiring of everybody, what happened, you know, how did it happen, what happened, you know, well, a shell landed, and, you know, and everything, it's quite nerve-wracking, you know, some of the news you want there, and others you don't want there. Some of the news, oh dear me. Well, let's put it on, there's a lot of them cry anyhow. Not be the first time I've cried anyhow when I've heard about one of my mates or someone getting killed or badly wounded or, you know, something wrong with them or whatever it is. And I've heard that. I've heard when they've, oh, thank God he's getting out. And everybody's, thank God the cells are getting out. Once they're getting out the cells, and then they start feeling more confidence in themselves, when they, you know what I mean, after getting over the shock of the battle. Which it must be a shock. To your nerves is getting steady, because some of them's like that, you know.
Shaking.
Yeah, and some of them's haggard, you know, with no sleep or walking all, you know, walking and carrying stuff and, you know, running about and everything.
It's tiredness.
You're tired. You just want to lay down and, you know. And, well, that's why you want rest. She couldn't go on. You couldn't go on. Your nerves would crack. You would crack and all.
In an attack like that, where you lose so many men, is anger expressed against?
Very tough, very angry. Oh, yes. You feel like if a German, sometimes you've got to watch them, because if the vet prison, they'd shoot them. You know what? We've got to shoot. Feel like shooting them. Just feel like putting the tommy gun right across them, which has happened. I know it hasn't. I've never experienced it like, but I've seen them threaten them, but I felt anger myself. I could have shot them. If the officer just give us the command.
You're still under discipline.
That's right. And that's where it comes in. If it hadn't been the officer, if anybody gives the command, you don't want to be responsible for your actions. You understand what I mean? So therefore, if the officer gives you, you're obeying orders. So therefore, you're in the clear. And I bet many of the officers thought about would have liked to give the order and all. You know? Yeah, I bet it's the same on the opposite side, so... The enemy have been just the same in the same predicament as we were many a time. But it's very nice, as I've said before, when you're going for it. It's very nice when you know you're winning. Your morale is three times better than when you're running away. Oh, it is. It's lovely. It's a lovely feeling when you're going for it. Even though you think you're going to get killed, but you know you've achieved something.
When the anger is over, do you treat the German prisoners well in a friendly way?
Well, naturally, some of them are very, you know, arrogant. They wouldn't, you know, they were still, when you take the arms off, they were still, you know, you had to watch some of them. But 95 or say 70%, they were very good, like, they were glad to get out, like us. They know the war had finished for them, which is anyone that gets taken prisoner. I know a lot doesn't want to, but I know a lot of them was thankful they did. They knew they were safe, weren't they? They knew they would go home sometime, didn't they? Better than a man that lost his life that was never going to get home, you know what I mean? And you also think that way and all. They didn't give themselves hope, but if there's no chance, like, what was the idea of committing suicide?
You've mentioned arrogance with some of them. With others, what kind of feelings did they show?
Well, it was the same when they take prisoners, you used to get them in, you know, to form in different groups. Some of them would, arrogance one, and the friendly ones would come and talk, the other arrogant wouldn't, you know, they would all be different groups, like a. As you got a Nazi, if you got a Nazi or an SS man, or they were proper Germans, you know what I mean? All these were mixed race, weren't they? Well, they thought, you know, you could get on with them, but these, no. And they wouldn't entertain the mixed race ones for being friendly. Were you always being friendly with them? No, they could talk, ooh, they won't have. If they could have grabbed a rifle and shot you, someone, they'd have grabbed, you know, they'd have had you. Well, always, it's just like the old paratroops that were trained, and these SS men, aren't they? They trained SAS, they trained so they could kill at any time, don't they?
But going into rest after a heavy action like this.
Pardon?
Going into rest.
Oh, you need a rest.
What kind of rest did that
well, you
entail?
Don't get, well, you might just be pulled back into a town in some old barns or something like that and like rest up. You don't do any drills or anything for a couple of days, like, but you keep fit. And you, to keep your mind occupied, you're doing your equipment and your guns. And you understand what I mean? Everything that's a soldier, to keep him on his toes, is not let him get bored. That's the part of a soldier, is not get bored and have a bit of entertainment. See, when we're to get rest, sometimes these stars, pop stars, well, when it's Sister Gracie Field come and sang to us, or somebody come and, you know, at a night concert, they'd come up, we'd be behind the line, but they'd come up to the line, they'd find an old, sometimes out in the open, just to put a stage up. Oh, you know, anything there. Or sometimes we would form our own entertainment of blokes dressed up as women on the stage. You know, anything to entertain us, just to get us laughing. Anything to get us, to keep us happy.
You would be getting, obviously, more replacements for all the men you'd lost.
Naturally.
What quality of people were these that were coming through to you at this
stage?
Well,
so we were getting a lot of stragglers off other battalions and all. So there were battle experienced men, a lot of them, you know. They'd just been slightly wounded or maybe went in hospital where someone broken down tonsillitis or something like that, or someone on the arm or broken a finger or something like that, and come back to the battalion. So a lot of them with battle experience to come back, or what you call being wirelisted. But a lot of them was, you know, had to get reinforcements. See, the bloke, when we got reinforced in front, was from them, the polar bear div from Iceland. They come out, they broke that div up, because they come and reinforced. There's a lot of them lads. But they weren't battle experience. Then that was the first action they'd ever been in. Like, a lot of them got killed, naturally.
Did they settle in well with the battalion quickly?
Well, a lot of them we knew. You know what I mean? They've been not a lad from this town and roundabout, like, you know, some from Spennymoor, some from Crookman, you know, they'd been, when they joined up, they'd been sent to Iceland, you know, and they were local lads with a Iceland Division, and not those local lads. Like, I knew one or two of them, a lot from Newcastle and all that, where they were more or less, you know.
Now, these were shared off from the battalion in 1939.
That's right, a lot of them was. I had two young to go, a lot of them 17 and 18, and that they didn't, they were put on this. I had two or three of them, yeah. What do we got reinforced with all kinds, man? You couldn't pick and choose which regiment you had to go into. With a few, if one battalion wanted to reinforce and the HQ, they had to send what they could.
Did this cause problems? People coming from all kinds of regiments and units?
Well, it did cause a bit of problem, like, you know, because they always wanted to get back to your own regiment, and it caused a bit of fights and, you know, a bit of arguments now and then, like, in different part of the country, you know what I mean? And different dialects and different ways of entertaining themselves and all, everything, you know, different ideas altogether. This northern part of the country is different to the south part of the country, where they've entertained themselves and thing, and lots of big heads among them, you know what I mean, like this and everything, but a lot of grand fellas among them and all. There was a lot of good lads among them anyhow.
After that, where did you go? What happened after that?
Action. Well, after that, we rested up, and then we on the plough again, on the road again. The next action we hit was in Brussels. There again, the tanks took, the guards armoured tanks we had, our guards armoured, they took Brussels. There again, it was mopping up. It was all around the town mopping up. Oh, from, we were a big stockade, you know, like a big, built a big, you know, and tents, just tents there, like, and we were sent out to patrol where there was any resistance, like, every day. That was the headquarters, get these pockets out, because a lot of the civilians were reporting the pockets. A lot of the, you know, the civilians were coming into the camp and reporting where they'd seen some Germans and that. So we had to go around more or less. Well, they were right about a week, got a fortnight to mop it up, you know.
How were civilians receiving you as you advanced?
Oh, civilians, they were going crackers. Very what? The gear gold, if they had it. Anything, they were very much. When we went into Paris, I bet we didn't go into Brussels, I mean, I'm sorry, when we went into Brussels, they were jumping on the wagons, jumping on the tanks, jumping on the vans, jumping on the jeeps, jumping on the motorbike, jump anywhere to get a kiss you, a kiss with the arms around you. Both women and men, both kiddies and old, everyone. That glad to see us. They didn't know they were touching any kind of group we wanted, where they could, if you stopped, if they were there with buns and, you know, anything, you know. Or come in the house, we had time, get in the house, you know. When we were in Brussels, like, I went to one or two houses, like, for dinner at night, because we used to, like, come back into the camp at night, you know, at a camp in South of Brussels, in the park there, I forget what the park. I was to be invited out to dinner. Had to put barbed wire out to keep the women out, anyhow. Couldn't get shot of them. We didn't want to move from there, I'll tell you that now. No, that helped the morale a lot, you know, because we're getting in the town and, you know, we're allowed to talk to somebody. I know the language was, there was harm signs, but you always get through, don't you? You always get through to the, what you want to do and what you want to know. I went to the cafe once or twice and I got invited down to this house two or three times. They were coming right in for taking you for, if you wanted to go for a meal, and if you walked in the cafe, it cost you nothing. You know what I mean?
Did you come across any of the resistance fighters?
Oh, yes. Oh, aye. One or two, aye. Oh, aye. I nearly got shot with some resistance fighters. Thought we were Germans, aye, because we were dark again. Aye, aye, you've got to watch the resistance fight at anything. Because their morale was up and all. They were firing at anything. Oh, aye.
Were they offering to help in any way?
Oh, aye. Oh, I was there to come and tell us whether, you know, well, didn't tell me. They went to the headquarters or what it is, or the battalion or the Brigade HQ, a divisional HQ, and there, every word come from there, like, what you had to do, like, and, you know, when the tanks were, after the tanks had gone through, but the tanks were first in, the tanks were always the first in, but to blast the way through.
When you left Brussels, where did you go after that?
Holland, we're just doing a bit of resistance fight up into Holland, then went up in Holland. Aye, we bumped a fair resistance there. It was more tanks at the end of the over the bridge at the end of, you know, end of the village. We couldn't get past them because it was only that way to get through, like, you know, over the canal there. And Judy had all these bloody tanks and everything, and we're trying to blast our way through, which is not so late. And every time we turned, look on, ooh, fire was going severe. You know, trying to get around, because we were around the corner. I remember me standing on, and it was belting the shells off. They were knocking the houses down left and right, you know. And well, we eventually did get through. We were there about a couple of days, two or three days, and all that. I can remember the Major Wood there. He was the officer in charge over it. Major, a bloke called Major Wood. I remember him saying, it's hot up that, because it was like Hellfire Corner. It was. You couldn't get through the village at all. It was like, they had, like, you know, all tank, anti-tanks and bloody artillery. And as soon as the tanks put his head round the corner, boom, you know, they were at him, you know. There was no way to get round otherwise. You couldn't go up the canal, you couldn't go around the canal. You had to go, this was the only road through it. And we had to get that road open for everybody to, you know, to get through, to get supplies through and everything. And every time we went through, we would get to the defended village, and then it chases back. That's what we're doing, a lot of street fighting there. We're doing it, you know, inside the houses and everything. The German flag would come out when the Germans were in charge. And when we were going in, they had to pull them in and put the English flag out. You know what I mean? It was rather cotton, but it was severe. Oh, yes, it was.
Do you remember what you were doing at this time? Would you remember what you were doing?
I was doing street fighting. They left pockets. They cleaned the pockets up because we couldn't get through. And I remember there was one or two in the old church, snipers and all, trying to snipe everything, you know. If you're going through in a carrier, I think, in a carrier or anything, you have to stand up, you know, and say, well, they were sniping them off, like, you know, sniping everybody off. There were snipers all over. We had to get shot to them first, and the artillery was, I was going around in the houses trying to sort them out. We took two or three prisoners, like, some give up, but I don't know what happened to a lot of them. A lot of them would be dead, man, like, you know, because we're just throwing hand grenades in sometimes. We were any doubt, it was just a hand grenade went in, you know, through the window. Oh, I know, messing. That was a particular, well, it's only nasty. I know, I just put the gun around and throw a hand grenade in. And if they were down the cellars and we knew the Germans, the hand grenade used to go down there. Oh, sometimes the Belgian people would tell us, Germans, Germans, Germans. But we knew they were in, like, we used to get around the house, like, surround it, like, if one threw a hand grenade from the back and I'd throw one from the front, do you see what I mean? And then we'd go in. If they knew there was nobody there, we knew they were down in the cellar. So we went to find where the cellar was, and or we used to shout down, like, and if they didn't come up, like, we made sure that they stopped down. They do the same with us. Do the same with us. Every exact thing. Oh, that was street fighting. You could go, you know, you could just turn the corner, and oh, dear me, you'd be face looking, jury looking at you. And you would just dodge back, and he would dodge back. You understand what I mean? Or maybe three or four of you, and then they'd dodge back and fire at you, you know, and then you have to dart out the road and find a way to get around them, or they were trying to find a way to get around us, or more or less stop us. We were going for it, like, you know. Oh, aye, and that was like Bruges, that was Bruges, Bruges in Belgium. Aye, that's we went from there, and then we went from there, that's right. Oh, we did, aye. I forget about that. I don't remember.
She lost a lot of men there again.
We did. But not as many. I think the 8th and 9th lost more than us. More, I think they were heavier than us. We were it, like, but not as heavy as them. Sometimes our battalion got heavy hit, and sometimes that other battalion's got heavy hit. It just depends what flank they come from. If we were in the centre, we might get better. If we're on the flank, you see, because you have to go 6th, 8th and 9th, or 9th, 8th and 6th in flank, you know what I mean, in battalion, see. So it just depends what flank we're on. Sometimes they got away with it, and sometimes we got away with it. And, you know, it was different. We didn't all. It wasn't the same battalion every time. You just understand what I mean? Don't say the 6th got all the glory. I did everything. They didn't. The brigade that did it, 151 brigade it was, 6th, 8th and 9th. So therefore, we're all in it together. Like, we all went in the tack together. We didn't just go as a battalion. We went in as a brigade, like, you know. Or if it was only a skirmish, like went as a battalion, we might have been one end of, as again, one end of Bruges, or they might have been farther up on the canal, farther up trying to get across. Or the others might have been farther down trying to get across. We might have been, you know, whatever it was. We're all going out, we're all at it together, like. Oh, aye.
Have you any other memories of that particular street action?
No, not so many. I remember, we took some prisoners, like, and... we took some prisoners, yes, we took some prisoners, and I didn't search them, one of these lads searched them, took this officer's watch and everything. And afterward, the officer went and complained to the CO about the technique, which he's not allowed to do, like, and they court-martialed this lad. Well, they didn't court-martial, but they caution him. So he always says to me, the next prisoner Jim I get, he says he'll be a dead one if I took his watch. Next officer, he says, if I took his watch, he'll never really complain again, he says. I remember that I didn't bother with the prisoners like then, you know. Sometimes I was to do, I have to do, like, you know, search them, or whatever it was, or guard them, or whatever it does, or whatever it is, or wherever it was, till they got somebody to come and whip them away, like, you know, just whip them in a truck if they could and get them away, out on the road.
Were you still driving for the officer?
Yes.
Still Fields?
Big man?
Was it still Major Fields?
Major Fields, yes. Yeah. Oh, he went right through France with us, yes. Oh, he wasn't a... I wouldn't say he was a brave man. I wouldn't say he was a coward, but he wasn't... As I says, he wasn't battle experience. That's what he come to us for, to get battle experience, he says, because he'd been... And he wasn't... He wasn't good with his orders and that, you know what I mean? I don't want to criticise the man because he's dead, like, but you know what I mean. I'd rather have Kirby, like, he was a more substantial officer. He was a better trained officer than he am.
In these actions, do you recollect any of the incidents which involved other men, you know, characters in the battalion, in your headquarter company?
There was one or two characters, like, you know. And, well, let me see. There's that man here, he had to come at you every day, like, you know, characters of one thing or another, like. I just, you know, my memory's gone a bit.
I know. Any officers, or other than Fields, any officers that did particularly well or not so well?
They don't like to criticise them. You know what I mean? But to what I saw them like, on the average, they weren't too bad. But there were some that, I wouldn't have trusted them with Boy Scouts. They weren't, let's be honest, the man, they were like everybody else. They were trying to save their own skins like everybody else was. Everybody tries to save his own skin if he can. So therefore, you got some good ones, you got some bad ones. But on the average, we didn't do so bad, like, you know, what I thought of them, like, what other people think was too different thing. We had some good sergeants, good sergeant majors, like, you know, in action. Because, see, everybody's the same equal in action. You've got to be. If you don't work as a team, if you're not, you can't be messing about calling sir and sergeant and stand of attention and all this. You've got to be all one happy family in action. Do as you're told, naturally. You take bare orders, but no. And have a joke with your sergeant or your officer, whatever it is, and you've got to, you know, what do you think? And sometimes they'll ask your opinion anyhow, even if you're a private. What do you think about this? Do you think it's, which is, they always say three heads or four is better than one, don't they? Oh, I've been asked opinions, and so has the sergeant. Ask you, well, what do you think? What should we go for? Do you think it's, well, I think there might be some mind phrase. Well, we'll check for them. Well, somebody might have a better suggestion. Well, it saves lives, doesn't it? Just with the other man speaking up and saying, asking the suggestion. Oh, yes. Oh, in action it is.
After Gill, where did you go after that?
Pardon?
Where did you move to next?
Up from Broads, after that, that was the last resistance in Belgium. Went up on to Holland, up into Nijmegen.
What happened there?
Well, I went to Nijmegen, and what would happen, like, the troops, well, we're waiting for Arnhem falling, weren't we? So we went up now, we took over from the Yanks. They took Nijmegen Bridge, did the Yankees, and we took over from them. You know, so Jury wouldn't, if a counter-attack, we're waiting for them. You see, they thought there was going to be a counter-attack. So the Yankees, you know, when they finished the paratroops, they just took everything off and toss it away. Just walk out, the Yankee paratroops. After out action, when they've done the job, well, a lot of ours do, like, you know, they don't carry the equipment out. We found out we've got a lot of Yankee rifles, you know, automatic rifles. Well, hey, and so we went down over the bridge, like, and got along by the canal, waiting. Well, our artillery would say over Primus, over Nijmegen Bridge, you were shelling it every day. And you would have the poor red cap standing there in a big steel box at the end of the bridge where he could get in the steel with a shelling. He had these long range guns on. He didn't blow it up or anything, but he hit it in the structure many a time. You understand what I mean? A lot of them went in the Rhine, like a lot of them went in the Rhine, you know. And so we went over across the bridge. There was a pontoon bridge at the side of the bridge on the left hand side of it, just below the bridge, a pontoon bridge on where the tanks went across. So they weren't, because see, Judy could see the bridge, it was visible, you know, with a big arch, he could see it with his spot the planes, the one thing and the other. So we went on the pontoon bridge, and we went along to, down to where, on the river, and waited, thought Anna was going to take, we were going to go in boats, you know, these boats were straight across and going to take Anna. Some of them tried, no good, but shut out the river. So we just sat there and sat there, like, you know, and they withdrew us back. You know, to the barracks in Nijmegen with the old back. Now we went in, was it the relief? I forget, was it someone, I don't know, the Lowland Division relief just in there, and they pulled back out, and then we went back in again, I think, you know, for to spell them, you know what I mean, to see. And then about 10 days after that, ten days after that, we pulled back again.
This would be late in the year. What were the conditions like now?
Well, the conditions were just the same, like, but we were winning, weren't we? We were going forward again, and we were going forward when you had them on the run. And it was the fight wasn't as getting as heavy, it was getting less and less and less. The farther we went from Bayou, from Villas, the farther we got, so we got past the corner, the less fight we got. We bumped resistance like we did at Broad, but after that we bumped, you know, somewhat nothing that we couldn't handle over a night or a day, you know what I mean? But till we got to Nijmegen, well, we couldn't land it because we couldn't get across. Because the bridge, he had the bridge. Couldn't get across the bridge, he was in Nijmegen, couldn't get across. It was only the river to get across. Well, so we wanted that bridge taken so we could get across. Well, that's what they went for, didn't it? Nijmegen Bridge, a bridge too far. We couldn't get all our tanks across the river.
When you were moving in and out, what kind of actions were you taking place there? Were you just a watching role?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've never seen as many troops and as many much artillery and tanks ready to go, you know, across, you know, ready to go. See, so if they'd taken the bridge, everything was ready, whip across. But it never materialised, did it? We didn't get the bridge. I have some photos of the bridge there, in there. Well, I've been back to Arnhem, and, you know, I've been back to Nijmegen, you know, I've been back to Arnhem and Nijmegen. I've been back to all, you know, I've been back about five or six times, like, you know, four or five times over there.
What was the weather like and the conditions you were fighting and moving under? Had they changed with the weather getting worse?
No, the weather was just starting to get worse then, just starting to get worse, like, because it was back end then. We seemed to be getting a lot of rain, a lot of wet, a lot of rain, I remember. And so you could shell at Nijmegen, but you couldn't get right into the centre of it. It was more or less along the river. You never shelled the centre, it was always where the troops were them. But along the river bank, you know what I mean? He was trying to pull the bridge up, but he never succeeded. If we'd taken that bridge, would have went straight through Germany straight away then. But I've never seen as many artillery, howitzers and guns, after getting across Nijmegen, where they were lined up all the way. And they were firing, man. But see, what could they fire at in Nijmegen? They don't know whether they were hitting their own troops or anything. They couldn't get through to them. They were on their own, weren't they? They were isolated. They cut them off, didn't they? So we just sat there. We went out and stood two in the morning and stood two at night. That's all we're doing, standing two and coming back. And there were troops there all day, right? But we were standing two. But there was observing posts, and waiting if anything happened, we would be on call straight away back into action. As I say, I was there, and that's where I come back from, you know. As I say, I was there about... After we've been there about, I don't know how long we've been there, about a month, maybe it was about 3 or 4 weeks, when they come and told me that I had to get me, and they briefed me and says I was going back to England. I didn't know the battalion was smashing up then. They come and told me, well, they didn't tell me, an officer come and says he wanted the office life. And he explained to us about this job over at Arnhem, like, he says we've lost Arnhem, you know, which we knew, like, ourselves. But it's only a matter of time, like, before we take Arnhem and go across the Rhine, like, he says, all these troops, you know, we had that much artillery, we didn't know what to do with it. I'll tell you that now, because I've never seen as much artillery on that bridge, across that bridge. Every other thing was a gun. Everything was a gun.
Who was commanding the battalion at this end, at the end when you were going back?
Pardon?
Who was commanding the battalion?
I think Colonel Green or Colonel Wood, one of them. Colonel Green or Colonel Wood, I'm not too sure which it was. I know Wood come back with us, Colonel Wood come back with us. So the Colonel Wood, I think it was Colonel Wood or Green. I don't know which one it was, to tell you the truth. Well, I don't know, like, because see, when I left, there was still a battalion. And they were still, like, sorting things out. A lot of them were getting transferred to different battalions. Like I said, they'd be reinforced other battalions. Of course, there'd be about 500 or 600 men of us then, like, eventually there'd be 1,500 men with three battalions. They broke the brigade up. Because they thought, like, as I can gather, that they'd had enough. They'd been in every action there was, and they didn't think they'd had enough. So they told us they were the crossing of the Rhine. There were so many men back to England to train all these surplus men for the crossing of the Rhine. And as it happened, I happened to be one of those selected, you know. Not that I was, you know, of any rank of anything, but just I was selected, that's all.